This is the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 21, One More Thing. Hi, my name is Oliver Drumnick. I'm your host for the Coconetics Podcast, formerly known as the Dr. Touch Podcast, but you might have gathered I renamed it. Main reason being people did not generally associate nice things with a doctor who touches. That could be emphasized. I'm actually, I just renamed my blog. I launched that, a new logo about a month ago. And so I figured I should also rename my podcast. It's a bit more obvious what it's about, Coconetics. In no way it's related to some sort of cult or so. It's just made up of two words, Coco, which is the framework we all use for making Mac and iOS apps, and genetics, which comes from basically creating stuff. Stuff is made up of genes, or in our case, stuff is made up of Coco. And I've even gone as far as choosing the tagline, our DNA is made up of Objective-C. So to say, it's even deeper than in the blood. We have Coco in our genes. Well, this episode is not scripted. I'm trying something new here. I basically have my browser open with my Instapaper account, and I've got half a year of headlines that I basically did not use in previous episodes. So I guess I'll just go through these and highlight a couple of very interesting stories and developments. So that's sort of like a flashback 2010. And maybe if we've got time, we can look a bit forward and see what we and other developers are wishing for 2011. So the first thing I have got here in my Instapaper is from a spouse of an employee of somebody at Electronic Arts. We don't know if he's still there. Or if maybe the outcry of his wife caused EA to basically fire him. That was highlighted quite a bit because it basically highlighted how people think that the big corporations who are in the software industry don't really treat their programmers well. Not giving them overtime, basically pressuring them to be part of a culture to get things done, basically to get the software out of the door and do that in a sort of mass production sort of way. That is a little bit reminding us of basically how sweatshops would work. And well, if you revisit this story, I thought it was a quite current one, but it turns out it's from 2004 and there are no updates since then. And now, you know, this Christmas, EA basically tried to win over the top ranks of all the games because they were selling all the big titles for just $1. So we don't quite know if EA treats its employees better than 2004. In light of the economic crisis that happened, and because there was no different story, I'd like to assume that it's still as bad. So if you are in the same position as me, being self-employed in iOS development, or if you have an employment that allows you to develop apps on the side, then you should be really thankful if you're being treated well. Or actually, if you're being self-employed, treating yourself well. So not basically pushing yourself too hard, but enjoying the liberties that this job basically entails. Going on, iOS 4 addresses over 60 security vulnerabilities. Well, that was the big thing in 2010, iOS 4 being released. There were lots of security vulnerabilities that were addressed, but the major things that we all loved are most importantly multitasking and Retina. Two things that Apple just basically did to completely leave the competition behind them. Multitasking, as you know, there are three modes. An app can either be location service requesting, it can be a voice over IP app, or it could be background completing something like an upload or a download. And if that doesn't take too long, it can be finished in the background. That's really something that it took quite a while for people to get right. Honestly, I just added background support to some of my apps in fall. It took like a quarter or two quarters for some even to figure out how to best deal with the multitasking. One article that I made for my blog was giving a flowchart of how the delegate messaging works for multitasking, and that's one of the most called up articles. So I encourage you to have a look at that if you don't yet know it. Just search for delegate messaging and multitasking and Coconetics, you'll find it. And then the second thing, Retina. It's something, it's incredibly easy to support. Basically, all you do is you don't statically link, so to speak, the names of the image files, but you generally use UI image, image named. And then if you have Retina support, it will automatically look for and load images that have an add2x behind them. That's like a multiplicator. Internally, when you program your UI, you will still use the 320 by 480 pixels, even though graphics might have double the resolution. That's another thing, making it incredibly easy to develop for both screen resolutions. And the other thing, Apple has hinted that there might be non-integer multiplicators for the screen resolutions in the future. Now, where would this be relevant? Well, we'll soon see the iPad 2. And one thing that I'd like to see is Retina on iPad, because the 1024 by 768 is nice, but the text could be sharper. And for a device that is supposed to be a reader, I'd assume that you would want quite a few pixels more to be actually be able to really read really well. Well, and so I did a bit of calculating, and if you multiply the 1024 by 768 with a factor of 1.5, you achieve a resolution that is 1536 by 1152, and incidentally these numbers are also divisible by 16, which is something that you will often see in graphics resolutions because of the video memory you can use, and that's quite efficient if it's divisible by a power of 2. So here we'll have a prediction that I'm now making for the iPad 2, that it will come with something that Apple will probably still call Retina, or at least much higher resolution, and it will be 1536 by 1152, and it will make reading ebooks and websites incredible on the iPad 2. So I'm looking forward to that. So to cut a long story short, Retina and multitasking, it's easy, support it. I can tell you from my own experience, it totally turns around how people perceive your apps, because if you support Retina really well, and you should get a professional graphic maker, so somebody who's good with Photoshop or Adobe Illustrator to make you images for both resolutions, that will really push your quality of your apps forward. So next thing that I see here, there's this old story, communities dominate brands, a tale of two smartphones, US versus rest of world compared. Well, generally, it seems that the United States has still a very, very big following in smartphones for BlackBerry. That's because many international corporations were kind of really entrenched in BlackBerry. But there's a certain trend moving away from there. Wherever people have a choice, Apple made it incredibly easy with iOS 4 to support the iPhone in corporate environments. They licensed the Active Sync technology from Microsoft, which has many benefits, like you can use your Exchange email via push, and that's also for contacts and appointments. But one thing that many people don't like, I can tell you from my own experience, that is they hate that they are forced to use a PIN. Many corporations use the policy to enforce that you have to lock your iPhone so that nobody who picks it up will get a glance at your secret emails from your corporation. So, well, if Apple would want to really do something that would, say, increase the adoption throughout corporations, then they would invent something to do away with the PIN lock. Some maybe RFID thing or biometric thing that securely locks your iPhone, but you can unlock it without having to enter numbers. So, like doing a gesture, or just if it magically would recognize you, then that would do away with a reason why many people would say, I don't need an iPhone because of this pin lock thing. And it the other thing that's a bit of a problem is you cannot usually corporations would not allow people to install apps. And what good is an iPhone if you don't if you're not able to install any new apps that you buy with your personal iTunes account? So well, that's one thing that Apple is probably going to continue addressing or trying to address, because the more big corporations use iOS devices, the better it is for Apple. And we're seeing a bit of a movement there. And the other story about smartphones, US versus the world, is how people perceive Android versus iOS. And there's no doubt in my mind that iOS is a couple of years ahead of Android. While Android is nice to have sort of a competitor that brings up the field, so to speak, the app market on Android is still very much in its infancy. And you can see that from big companies like Rovio. They made lots of money selling Angry Birds on iOS devices. They made almost the same, if even a bit more, on Android, but not selling apps, just by getting ad-supported apps. And that's basically something that many people say destroyed the App Store experience on Android, which is something that Steve Jobs will probably quite like. So people are generally not inclined to pay for something on Android. Whereas it's quite easy on iTunes to buy something. You just enter your iTunes account, and I can see years and years before it took quite long for me to make a purchase decision, because software would generally cost like $60 or $70 for a game, and now to spend like I did today $5 on the Dungeon Hunter HD on my iPad to get basically a fully fledged console quality game. Well, I think that's the standard, and if that's something that Apple can achieve and Android cannot, because people won't be willing to spend money on the Android App Store like that, then iOS will continue to have a big lead over Android. And the numbers, if you just hear, yeah, we have like that many 100,000 activations per day, while you can argue if they are cheating or not on these numbers don't tell you the kind of people that have Android devices. And in my own area, where if I look at people I know who are in the technology industry, in IT, almost nobody has Android devices. Just very, very few. So the story might be skewed if you only see the US market. I'd say about 2/3 of the market are international, and there, well, if people can get their hands on an iPhone 4, they will not hesitate. It's only if they are forced to stick with a certain provider, and this provider doesn't have the iPhone, then they would choose an Android phone. But here in small Austria, where I am, just this past 1 or 2 months, all the other big providers got the iPhone 4 as well. So that's RN's Mobilcom, and Three from Hutchinson. Both of them got the iPhone now. So no longer any kind of reason to basically not take the iPhone. If people can get it, they will take it. So that's good news for everybody who is concentrating on this market, because I think it's in the constant process of exploding, and that in a good way. So exponentially growing, and lots of people seeing your app for the first time, and causing an incredibly long tail. So you know, from if you look at sales chart, you will have peaks whenever your app is featured or when it's new, and then you will have a tapering off that never kind of reaches zero. And I've seen that with my apps as well, even some that I didn't look at for a year now already, still there's everyday people who look at your apps, and a couple will always buy them. So you will always make a couple of dollars even on an app that you didn't look at. That doesn't mean you should not revisit your old apps, but you should continue to polish the apps that you are proud to be having on the store, and maybe even taking apps that you are no longer really supporting and making them free. I'm not saying you should take them off the store, because you spend so much time getting it on the store, so maybe you should leave it, but maybe you should make it free and tell the people, sorry, I have other priorities, I cannot support this app. But if you like it, try it out and drop me an email if you think it's still got potential. Then when I get around to it and I see many people supporting the app, then, well, I could resurrect it, basically. So here's an idea for you. Next story, AppRung pays users for app installs. So there are a couple of stories, a couple of sites, I mean. AppRung is one. I don't remember the other one. I made a framework for them, but still don't remember the name. So there are a couple of ideas that revolve around developers paying for certain numbers of customers. And usually you have sort of a verification system that tells via a server how many users you actually have had install your app. And then based on that, you will pay. I haven't heard any kind of big success stories from that. So I can't say anything more here. It sounds interesting for people who are really hooked on apps to basically make a couple of cents for each app they install. We're going to watch that. It's a bit of a gray area. Is it something where you would say, well, they are purchasing reviews, or is it something of true benefit to the user and thus also of benefit to the developer? We don't know. We will see. Components of 16 gigabytes iPhone 4 estimated to cost Apple $188. Well, it's obvious. Apple is making about 100%. So anything they are selling, I'd say it costs them less than half in components of what it's selling for, and that's what causes Apple's strong position, so that they have so much cash in their war chest. And we're interested to see what kind of acquisitions they're going to make in the near future, 2011. In 2010, we know they purchased Quattro Wireless, which became iAd, which is also doing really well. Besides of some stories that certain brands did not like the creative control that Apple is exerting over the iAd creation. But generally we see iAd doing quite well. So that came out of an acquisition. So we'll be interested to see the kind of acquisitions that Apple does in the near future. They just recently acquired a mapping company, and a couple of jobs on their websites indicated that they're looking for engineers with navigation knowledge. So we can assume that they are going to do something in the location arena, location-based, not advertising, I'd say, but possibly doing their own maps for a turn-by-turn navigation type thing, like you get for free in the Android. Apple cannot use the built-in Maps app for that because they didn't license the maps for it. But well, we see. I think that Apple knows that mobile navigation is something important, and this one acquisition they did in the summer, I think, points in the direction that they're spending time and effort there. So we'll get something in the location arena soon, in the iPhone 5, maybe in the iPad 2, we'll see. So that's nothing out of the ordinary, $188 for an iPhone 4 in components. Apple needs to make money, and they have a certain philosophy of making a certain amount. And I think the certain amount that they're looking for is like between 20 and 30% at least, where they can. And in the premium segments, it's even going up to 50%. So that's good. And people fortunately pay that kind of money. And it's not that Apple is getting like sitting on their laurels, but I think they are continuing to build up a war chest to build out their lead they have in the mobile and the Mac space. Yeah, another thing about Mac, we're going to see a release of a new operating system next year. Possibly no later than the summer. Snow Lion. We'll see how they manage to transport some of the experience they learned from iOS, like multi-touch, or how you sandbox apps back to the Mac. So that was the idea behind the presentation that Steve made. They learned things in iOS that they are now going to be putting into the desktop platform. That's going to be interesting. And the big announcement, or the big news that we'll see in already a week, is that there is going to be a Mac App Store. And I'm more on that later. So picking up the pace a bit, let's see what we got here as well. A pair of App Store studies shows Apple is the dev's choice for now. I don't think that has really much changed. If you are like myself, by yourself, then it doesn't make sense really to diversify to too many platforms. It's my personal opinion and choice to concentrate on just one and do that really well. And so far, it's paying off. It's my first year here, and I'm doing pretty well. There were fraudulent developers who tried to game the App Store system with the reviews and so on. They keep getting removed if Apple finds these. Apple started approving LED flashlight apps because of the iPhone 4 had a flash, and it seems that they loosened the restrictions there for what kind of apps they're going to permit. But a bit later than that, afterwards, they said that they're basically not going to permit too many additional apps which don't kind of stand apart from what is already on the App Store. So, well, while this is a easy thing to write, it's not something that you would want too many similar apps on the App Store, because, well, what does the customer think? We all make crappy apps. Well, no, don't do apps like that. Make apps that the people will really use, not something that, yeah, it's not just basically a technology demo. So Apple did quite a bit trying to prevent fraud in the future. They even looked into hiring iTunes fraud prevention specialists. Consumer Reports still cannot recommend the iPhone 4 because of the antenna issues. Whereas I personally have to say, I have a bumper. I made use of the iOS bumper program, iPhone bumper program, and I'm very, very satisfied with my iPhone 4. So, well, iPhone 4 is the phone to get until there's an iPhone 5. What else? iPhone 4 sets texting speed record, beats Samsung Galaxy S. Apple to increase frequency of pay for iOS developers. Yeah, we see. They didn't really increase the frequency. It's still monthly, but you just get one payment now, which is better, because previously I wouldn't, for example, get the payments for Japan because I would sell too few apps there. Now I get one monthly payment. And while this is a bit harder on my accountant, because I have like 7 regional reports and I just get one payment, but it's easier for me, and it probably saves a bit of banking fees. So that's a good thing to just get one payment. And I think there's still this $250 or so. So if you start out and manage to get above the $250, all markets together, then you will see your payments. So that's a good thing. Apple looking out for us and making it ever easier. And there was another change during the year. If you are in a country that doesn't have the dollar as a primary currency, you could specify the currency that Apple should pay you in. I chose euros, of course. Earlier, I first got all my payments just in euros, and now I got all my payments in just a single payment. So it's getting better there. iOS 4.1 had Bluetooth and proximity sensor fixes. That came to address some of the issues that came with 4.0. Apple opens iOS to third-party dev tools, reveals approval guidelines. That was a biggie in September. After being quite intransparent for a while, Apple finally put it in writing what the guidelines are. And I think generally it gives us more confidence in the platform, because while there are a couple of edge cases where you think, well, it would be great if they would allow, say, Wi-Fi scanners, but I'd say they're doing a pretty good job in keeping the App Store a good business platform for us. So while there are some people who say, well, it's not worth it or so on, it's still a good thing. We can see that there's lots of competition in the areas that are allowed, so that makes it a bit harder to just sustain yourself on apps. So people like me have to do consulting and training and so on. But more competition generally is a good thing. It will probably force you to concentrate on a couple of apps of yours that are doing relatively well, and that by the same token means abandoning other apps that don't have any sales. As I said before, that's maybe something you should do for 2011, for the turn of the year, to think which of your apps are the ones that you can really continue to put your passion in, and the ones that you have sort of abandoned because you just don't have the time and you don't have a team to look after these apps, these you should make free. There was this thing in 2010 between Adobe and Apple where Adobe first made a big announcement: we are going to provide the packager for Adobe, I think it was Illustrator, to allow people to make basically Flash apps into native iOS apps. And then Apple barred them, so to speak, by putting out the guideline, we are not going to allow third-party development tools. Well, all of that was reversed, because in October, suddenly, with these new guidelines they put out, everything is well again. It's just that we basically have to look for the quality. So I think Apple always was interested in keeping the quality of the apps at a certain minimum level. And the fear they had was that if you made Flash apps, you wouldn't make use of new technologies that are available on the iOS platform, like, say, multitasking, 3D graphics, graphics accelerated user interface, and so on. But interestingly, even though Adobe said, well, great, now everything is good again, we didn't actually see any big announcements there. And the packager, as far as I'm aware, is still like in a beta version. All the big magazines are not using it. They have more or less their own readers that display JPEGs or PDFs. So, too little, too late. Or did Apple make a smart move here? We don't know. Probably. not many things that Apple are doing are really stupid. One thing that I've been lobbying for quite a while, ever since I started getting sales reports, I was dissatisfied with how the system worked, to having to go to a website to download the reports and only getting like 7 daily reports. Well, Apple tends to listen, but then they do it still their own way. Because I would have loved for them to actually provide me with an API to download the reports. What they did is, they updated the website. It's now everything in Ajax. They retired the old piano, it was called, which is basically the same system that record companies had. I suspect, I don't have any contacts in the record industry, but I suspect they also got the new Ajax up interface. And at the same time, roughly in fall, Apple released a sales and trend reports app on the App Store. Funny enough, that was actually something I had in my feature request for the API. I basically told them, either make an API, or if you don't feel the security allows for that, make an app for it. And so they did, but unfortunately they forgot about monetary values, because that's the thing that basically makes it useless. They have an app that's very nice. They have an API. I had a look at it. It's a secure API that unfortunately we cannot reverse engineer, because it's sending the password as a really big hash. So, hopefully someday Apple will see the light and also tell us actually how much money we're making, and not just how many units we sold. I imagine maybe big companies are more interested in the number of apps downloaded and apps updated, like you see it at the moment. But we small developers would like to know, well, I'm making $100, $1,000 a day, something like that. So Apple, if you're listening, please, either let us really have an API and we add the monetary values ourselves, or add monetary values to the official app, which would basically destroy the market for the tools vendors. But well, you can't have it everything, and I'd rather concentrate on making apps that the entire world is purchasing than just continuing developing on my app sales if something better comes along. Speaking of something better coming along, a couple of websites are continuing to vie for the attention of developers. There was App Annie, there was AppLizer, there was App Figures. I'm not going to look into these too deeply. My personal take here is, I won't entrust my iTunes credentials to an external site. That's my personal credo. So I continue to use my app sales. If you are not the kind of mobile person and you prefer an app that's running on your Mac, then AppViz is the app to get. It's like, I don't know, $30 or so. You can definitely afford that. But I don't like to deal with Chinese who have my iTunes password. Not saying that companies like App Annie, who is Chinese as far as I'm aware, would do something nasty with your credentials. But well, you don't know. Security breaches can happen, or somebody who might get his grubby fingers on your credentials might cause you some harm. So I'm not feeling really at ease with trusting these services. So I'd rather use a limited thing like the one Apple provides, or use my own. Like my app sales, you see the source code, you see what's happening there, and you don't have to give your password to anybody. So in November, or was it in, no, it was still in September, Adobe said it's going to resume the efforts on Packager for iPhone. As I said, I haven't heard anything there. So if you know anything, if you are in the Flash arena and there's something interesting here, hey, let me know. Drop me an email at oliver@dropnik.com or also oliver@coconetics.com. It's actually the same. And let me know if there's any relevant development. So what else? We're getting close to the end. Apple raking in the mobile profits. Apple approves Google Voice apps and basic interpreter in Commodore 64. Apple launched Wi-Fi iPad models in China. HDR photos in 4.1. So 4.1 wasn't just about fixing the Bluetooth problems and the proximity sensor. It also gave us HDR. So true photo geeks would say, well, it's not real HDR, but it still makes the photos look really nice because it takes several exposures of a picture and then takes where you have the detail in the dark areas and where you have lots of detail in the bright areas and makes a composite photo of it. I love it. I make a picture of something static, so you can't have people or things being moving too much, because then you won't get the matching images and you would have like ghost images. But if it's something static, like a landscape or a portrait of somebody, well, HDR is really great there. So the article I've here says it's probably from a result from an acquisition. So Apple is also acquiring companies and the knowledge they have to put new features into iOS versions. As contrasting Google, which basically just tries to tap the knowledge and the brain power of the Google employees and people developing on Android as something that Apple will also continue to have as a lead on Google. Apple just has the money and invests in purchasing companies that have something to provide that's beneficial to all of the users of the platform, users as well as developers. That's another thing what I love about Apple. If there's any kind of hot new technology, Apple will probably not look at it. But if it's something that's tried and proven and is kind of falling a bit to the side, no longer so much attention, then Apple will take it, make it usable, make it programmable, and then the technology has its big breakthrough. So to give one example, Apple never really thought much about Blu-ray. And to this date, we still don't have any Blu-ray playing capabilities on Macs. But then there are things like this HDR, like multitasking. Once Apple figures out how to do it in a way that's user-friendly, we'll see it. And that's a good thing about this platform. So I'd rather be on a platform that is being developed like that than one where it's so open and everybody can do everything with it. And we see that the market divides itself between iOS. You got people who are willing to pay for apps and not having a problem with paying a couple of dollars every month on apps to just try out new stuff. And you'll have people who are forced or maybe seeing themselves as rebels going with Android. Yeah, the old story again. All right, what else? Yeah, there's this old story. Security Review finds 68% of top iPhone apps transmit UDIDs. Well, it's something that was rather new in mobile devices or development in general, that there's a unique ID that you can use as a developer. And if you can use it, you will use it. The unique ID that was present in the Pentium processor quickly got disabled for probably the same reason. People, privacy, and I don't know. Apple controls the platform, so they say we have this UDID and we want to be able to use it. And so this and the recent article in the New York Times saying that there's too much information being transmitted by apps. Can be a good thing, can be a bad thing, probably being blown out of proportion. If the information is there and it will enable companies to say, well, we have that many percent of our users on iOS 3, that many on iOS 4, that's a good thing. And also, I think if they want to use UDIDs to know if somebody has like a legitimate copy of their app, then they should be allowed to do that. Recently, Apple removed there was supposedly an API to detect if an app runs on a jailbroken iPhone. Personally, I've never seen that, but somebody said that there was something like that and Apple removed it or disabled it. Don't know. So that's the battle that's going on between jailbreakers and even worse, crackers of apps and the platform vendor. It's a battle that's never going to be decided. So it's something that you as a app developer have to decide for yourself. If you are content with the download numbers you get via the official channels, or whether you see that your app appeals to certain groups of customers that are likely to pirate your apps. So if you have like games, I'd say, are a big target because games are being played by young people, and young people often might not have an iTunes account or might have the iTunes account of their parents, who would not permit them to be spending money on apps. So, well, there is a certain problem with piracy on the App Store, but personally, I think it's not as bad as on other platforms. Like, you can download any new Mac or PC game through news groups or through torrents. So if you really don't want to pay for software, there's always ways around that. I know people who only get their games via these channels. But as I said, I'm looking forward to the Mac App Store, because that, together with another thing that we saw in the last year, was Steam coming to the Mac. And I can tell you from my own experience, it's a great experience. my brother-in-law is doing a LAN party every year for 2 days. And this year was the first year where I was able to play Counter-Strike on my 27-inch iMac. So I just took my iMac. It's just one thing that you carry, and the keyboard and mouse. Only thing I had to do is I had to use a tool to remap the command and the alt key so that I can use the alt key, the command key for crouching next to the space. But apart from that, it was brilliant. And I think we're going to see more and more gaming and casual gaming and more available software due to the Mac App Store at lower prices than what you would have to pay for these things on PCs. So while I'm not, I don't make any money with providing software for the Mac, but that's one thing that I don't exclude. So if I have a great idea or any chance to participate in a Mac-based project, I will probably jump for that. It's something that many iOS developers attempted now. The Mac App Store will be the next big thing, and it's so big that Apple even releases it before Snow Lion, because they know it's half a year in lead. They can get over the any kind of competition, and it's going to be good. I think it's really going to be a great thing. So downloadable apps via Steam or the Mac App Store, it's all building on the platform that we love. And the more this platform becomes viable for everybody, the better, personally, I think. So let's see. Final few articles that I have here. Then I basically have cleaned out my Insta paper and I'm ready for starting fresh for 2011. What we got here, App Store submission tip, preparing in-app purchase items for app review using the same, Apple allowed to, that you can use the same app name. That was not something working right away. That was just in 10th of December. Before that, you would have to rename your app. So you couldn't have an Instapaper iOS app and an Instapaper Mac app. Now you can. So Apple listening here and doing away with restrictions if they really don't make any sense. Yeah, Apple disabled jailbreak detection API in iOS 4.2, also in December. Google Latitude now in the App Store. Previously, it was rejected for reasons of causing customer confusion. Now they are there, and they're using the background API. So if you use Latitude, that's an interesting scenario. It allows you to share your location with select people. It's so interesting even that I'm going to add Latitude support in Geocoder. I'm now working on version 1.3 and I'm going to add several tracking services to it in addition to the custom tracking service that you already have. And that's going to be one of the updates I'm submitting to the App Store beginning of the next year. Big engines also coming to the iPhone. There was the Unreal Dev Kit that was updated and just released with iOS 4.2, which again unified iOS and iOS on iPhone and on tablet into one operating system. So that was a good thing as well. So you again can rely on the same kind of trimmings being available for your iPhone apps as well as for your iPhone apps. Mac App Store won't support Game Center in-app purchases, at least in the beginning. It's probably because they have to do a couple of things before they can provide Game Center and in-app purchases. It's a you need quite a bit of security to keep in-app purchases safe from crackers and pirates. And I think what Apple is trying to do here is launch it similarly as on the mobile platform. You remember in the beginning you didn't have in-app purchases and Game Center there as well. But I have no doubt that this will come eventually to the Mac as well. So maybe down the road you will be able to play a game both on a Mac and on an iOS device. Maybe having different kind of views on the same thing, like on an iPad, I'd see more like a strategy overview, like you are the fleet commander or something. And on the Mac, then you would fly the individual space planes and carrying out the orders that the fleet commander is sending you. There are games working similar to that, and I see different form factors playing together in harmony. That would be a great thing here. But as I said, currently no Game Center, no in-app purchases, but they will come. And now Mac App Store will be live January 11, says The Loop. Yeah, they were right. It's going to be January 6th that we're going to see the Mac App Store, and I'm looking forward to it. Purchased a couple of Mac apps already on Steam and got good prices there. And I assume that the Mac App Store will also be causing me to play quite a bit more. So there you have it. 2010 brought us quite a few interesting developments, some of which you will see the fruit bearing in 2011, like the Mac App Store, like the iPad 2, iOS 5, the iPhone 5. I think it's going to be a great year, 2011, on the greatest platform there is. For me personally, 2010 was the first year that I worked fully, full-time, self-employed in iOS development, and it turned out quite well. So I seem to be able to build on this basis that I created for myself and create maybe more apps, polish more apps, have more partnerships. So as I said, looking forward to 2011, going to be a great year. And I wish you the best. If you have any kind of infos for me, drop me an email, oliver@dropnik.com or oliver@coconetics.com, and let's make 2011 the best year ever.